Welcome to Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Each episode brings grounded insights, sharp truths, and honest conversations with experienced leaders and coaches as we explore what it really takes to lead well today. We don't deal in one-size-fits-all answers. We spark ideas, offer grounded perspectives, and create space for you to work out what fits your world. So let's get into it. Relevance is one of those questions that creeps up quietly, not because we suddenly stop being capable, but because the world around us keeps shifting. Technology changes, expectations change, how we communicate, lead, and work together changes. For some people, relevance becomes tangled up with age. For others, it's about AI, automation, or whether the skills that got them here are still the ones that matter now. And underneath all of that sits a deeper question. Relevant to what exactly? The work we do, the role we're in, the people we lead, or the life we want going forward? And often, the impact of standing still only becomes clear much later. So, Tiffany and Nick, with that in mind, when you hear the question, are you still relevant, what comes up for you?
I'll jump in. I'll say self-awareness always, always, always. That is something that the more you're aware. And I think with that, you can keep yourself relevant. And it's interesting, you mentioned AI. What's come up with me, with a lot of my clients, is not necessarily the AI, it's a question of age. It's a question of coming to a point in their careers where, in fact, more and more recently in big organizations, they're kind of being managed out in various different ways. And the question is coming up now, what next? You know, they're at 50, 51, 52. And being of that age, we still have several good years left in us. And, you know, the question is, what next? So the relevance for me comes in more with age than with AI.
Interesting. For me, the question actually begs another question, relevant to what? And in that, I think age does come into it. Tiffany, thank you for raising that, because that for me is one of those things that age seems to be a differentiator in some people's eyes. And sadly, maybe there's a truth to it. If age brings with it an unwillingness to be current around things like technology and AI, if age brings with it an unwillingness to do what's necessary to fulfill the role, then we do become irrelevant. But that doesn't mean to say that we're irrelevant to everything. It could be that there's a change of role for us. It could be that there's a new focus for us. So what got us here may not be the thing that carries us forward from this point.
And so here's what came up for me when you were saying that. If you're resistant to new ways of doing things, is age the deciding factor? Are you relevant? If you're 25 years old and you're resistant, does that make you more or less relevant than a 50-something year old who's resistant?
I don't think it's age related for me. I think relevance is actually where your interests lie.
Yep.
You know, as coaches, we quite often talk with clients about goals, values, beliefs, all of these things. The best results come from having everything in alignment.
Yep.
Now, relevance actually is a good question. I'm really pleased Alec raised this time, because relevance really actually does tap into the things that we value and the goals that we have and the beliefs that we hold. And if we find that anything that we're trying to do is not aligned with values and beliefs, then actually we probably find ourselves feeling less relevant.
But does that also extend to what we are doing in terms of what motivates us, what engages us, and actually how does that then impact how we work?
Ooh. Now, I would say absolutely, because when your values, when you're living in alignment with your values and your beliefs, that's when you're living in a state of happiness, of contentment, if you like. And that's where you're more likely to find motivation and focus. Whereas if you're living out of alignment with your values, or you're in a situation where your company has suddenly changed the way that it's asking you to work, and that's caused a shift in the way that you're living, that's where you end up feeling disheartened, disappointed, unhappy. So I would say that values are directly linked with motivation.
Well, I think, though, to come back to the question, Alec, and the way that you framed things at the beginning of this conversation, we've started talking about the relevance of the individual from the individual side.
Yeah.
But it can be that actually the skills that we've developed over many years start to have less relevance in the workplace because of the arrival of technology. So let's say, for example, before calculators and computers came along, people added up lists of numbers in their heads. Now, it was a great skill to have, and you could amaze people with your ability to do it, especially when with the currency was pounds, shillings and pence, if anybody remembers that.
You're in your age, Nick, yeah.
But seriously, though, the ability to add three columns of numbers that were not decimals, they were, you know, different ratios. I know people that were able to just run their finger down that list and add all three columns up at the same time. An amazing ability. But it became redundant because we became decimal. And then calculators and computers and everything else came along. And that really is the question about relevance, isn't it? It's actually, we have a skill, it's useful to us, over time things change, what do we do? Do we stay where we were and insist that everybody converts everything back to pounds, shillings and pence for us so we can use the skill that we've got? Or do we actually go with the flow and actually understand that stuff does change and that we need to go with that and actually remain as close to relevance as we can?
I think on that, one of the things that came to mind when you were saying that was maybe the first question is, are we still relevant in the environment we are in? Now, that would include the workplace, but also includes our personal lives. Because one of the big things I'm starting to see in the workplace now is actually we need to start thinking about prioritizing our soft skills. Now, let me give you an example of that. I was doing a talk last week on managing Gen Z. For many organizations, Gen Z is a big challenge. One of the aspects of that is that they communicate in a different way that maybe older generations are not used to. So what's being suggested is that the older generations have to adapt and actually learn, how does Gen Z typically communicate? And what have we got to change, or even what have they got to try and change, so we can meet in the middle and get that communication we need?
Absolutely. Soft skills are becoming more and more important in the workplace. And I think I loved your example, Nick, about counting, you know, adding up in your head. And I've got Major Horn, my maths teacher, going, "You're never going to have a calculator in your hand all day long." Ha! How wrong he was. And in my case, thankfully, he was wrong, because I was never one of those people. So soft skills, however, is something that I'm quite good at. And yes, organizations are now, I think, demanding that soft skills are put more into play. And I'm not convinced that it's just because of Gen Z. I think traditionally leadership was very fear-based. It was fear-driven in as much as, you will do what I say, or I will fire you, or I'll make sure that you won't work here. Or, you know, it was always that very kind of very toxic environment. Traditionally, it was men in leadership roles. And traditionally, men, when we're talking about beliefs and social norms, men were told that big boys don't cry. So big boys didn't cry. Big boys had no idea what their emotions were. They didn't talk about them, and they left them at the door. You know, this is seen in the silent generation, definitely, who had things that they couldn't talk about. They didn't want to go back there. And you've got the boomers who were raised by that generation. So that whole emotions was just something that nobody talked about. It comes in with Gen X, we're a little bit better at it. And of course, then you've got millennials and Gen Z now are all about their emotions. So I think it's not just because of that generational push. I think it's in general, we have seen that leading a company or leading an organization or leading a team with the soft skills, you're more likely to be productive, you're more likely to be efficient, and more importantly, you're going to have people who stay. Your labor turnover is going to drop dramatically because people are going to be happy to come to work.
There was another interesting aspect in what Tiffany was saying, because another big thing about soft skills, and I was quite struck by this. I've got a client that's now in Saudi Arabia. They were in the UK, and they actually said how we do business typically is not through email. It's verbal communication. It's going back to what you could maybe argue was more prevalent in the UK 30, 40 years ago. You would talk over a deal and do a handshake. Mm-hmm. But actually, in places like Saudi Arabia, that's still what's expected. And if you can't verbally communicate what it is you're going to provide or to understand what the client wants, that makes that process much more difficult.
Yep. And as for relevance, you see, and this is interesting because we were talking about age and sort of how age can make you less relevant. I think the younger generations are not as able to communicate face to face as we are.
No. Mm.
They communicate, they won't pick up the phone. They're uncomfortable with the telephone. They would rather send a message, a text message, and WhatsApp, whatever it may be. And the problem with that is that they also, they're so used to sending messages. There's no punctuation. There's no capital letters. There's no professionalism in the way that they send those messages. So it's very difficult to communicate what you're trying, your point of view, or what it is that you want when there's no context. So I think there's a lot to be said for picking up the phone and having a conversation. It's the only way that you can be sure.
Now, a wrapper around what you've both just been talking about there is communication was mentioned several times. Communication is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. So if we have one generation speaking one language and another generation speaking a different language, or we have somebody who's technical speaking technical language and somebody who's not technical, not understanding the technical language, there is no communication. The communication is not there because it's not two-way. And so there has to be a degree of movement or adoption, acceptance, accommodation, whatever the word is, on the part of both parties to that communication, because otherwise there is no, as the lawyers would say, meeting of the mind. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, communication is really key. But with communication, and this for me is most important, comes relationship. And I think this does have a relevance to relevance. Because if I'm in a relationship with somebody, a colleague at work, and I don't mean an inappropriate relationship, but if I'm in a relationship with somebody that I work with, some member of the family, unless the relationship has got a foundation, trust, confidence, and all of those other things, the communication will be poor and the relevance becomes fragmented. It drifts apart. And so we're not in touch. And relevance is about staying in touch, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know what I love with what you've just said, Nick, is you mentioned trust. And in one of our last podcasts, we were talking about what it takes to be a good manager, a good leader of a team, and trust came in to that yep. as being the number one thing that was required in order to lead anybody. And communication is a two-way street. However, everybody would be well advised to keep in mind that we only know what it is that we've said. We never know what it is that the other person has heard. So in order to ensure the meeting of those minds, clarification is always a good idea. Absolutely. And it goes back to when you're sending a WhatsApp message. So, for example, I could tell you a story. I was opening a bank account recently, and we got a thing back saying, well, you haven't signed most of the papers. And we're like, we've signed all of the documents. What is it that you need? And the email that we got back was written in block capitals.
Ouch.
So, I'm sorry. Don't shout at me. You know, and on top of that, the person was wrong. Now, I don't know what their intention was when they wrote that email. Maybe their caps locks just got stuck and they hadn't taken it. I have no idea. There's probably 10 other things. But the way that I perceived it, which became my truth, was you're shouting at me and I really don't appreciate it. Because on top of that, you haven't answered my question.
Yeah.
So writing things in an email and in text messages, and you never know what the intention behind the words is.
Right. And people can be brief. You know, you mentioned about lack of punctuation, no capitalization. These things were in language for a reason. Mm. It's because they actually help to give the meaning, to help with the context and so forth. Where there's an absence of those things, it can actually kind of make it difficult. And again, when we're talking across generations, it can make it really tough to really figure out what did they mean? What is it they need? How do I do this? And so we need a bit of help.
But it changes the sense. So for example, I'm giving up drinking till Christmas. No comma.
It's a statement.
Yeah. But I'm giving up, comma, drinking till Christmas. Completely different statement.
Yeah.
So does that then link back to what you said at the beginning, Tiffany, thinking of everything we've discussed so far, this is all about self-awareness and actually just asking that question, number one, about soft skills. But actually, when we look at where we are in the workplace as an example, are we sure that we're not underestimating the skills we have, or are we overestimating the skills we have? Because we don't have that, maybe that general awareness of what's going on around us. So we think we're comfortable. Oh, we're fine. We can deal with all this. You've talked about communication. And in fact, when we start to get that focus time and that reflection time, we think, no, we're not that good at that.
But that's where self-awareness comes in. Self-awareness is the trigger to everything that we've been talking about. Because if you're unaware, you're probably quite comfortable in where you are. Everything's fine. They're all wrong. I don't need, I'm fine. It's also, it's quite an ego-heavy based place to be, because it's like you're not open to the possibility that maybe there's something else. So ergo, you're right, everybody else is wrong. Great, no responsibility required. When you start to ask questions of yourself, that's when, well, first of all, if you have no EQ, if you've got no emotional intelligence, then, you know, the self-awareness is going to be difficult. You're not going to have the communication with other people. So everything is all linked. So asking yourself, where is my place in all of this? Those existential questions, you know, could I be doing better? Could I be embracing new technologies? It's understanding that it's okay to feel uncomfortable with new technologies and with new ways of doing things, because when you're uncomfortable, it means that you've been pushed outside your comfort zone and you're growing.
So we need a growth mindset. So the first thing is we need a growth mindset.
Exactly.
We got to accept and be realistic on what we are good at, what we're not good at, and think, right, if I'm not good at certain areas, embrace that. And actually, yeah, I'm happy to develop that and move forward. But then that's leading back to adaptability. Mm. It's back linked back to change, because the issues are we don't want to change.
Yes,
I mentioned this at the beginning. Change, adaptability all comes into the growth mindset.
But change is the only constant in our lives. And it's very strange, because it's also the thing that people fight against the most without realizing that our whole life is about change. Yeah. As parents, the minute our children are born, our life is constantly changing. Mm-hmm. You think you've got babies hacked and they go and they grow and something else happens. So you've got to get sorted with that. And then they start school and then they start another school. And it never stops. It's constantly changing. In the workplace, it's constantly changing. There's always things coming in. Some things make us feel more comfortable. Other things make us feel uncomfortable. And suddenly, if they're uncomfortable, we talk about change management. We've all gone through change. End of October, the clocks went back. Change.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about understanding. I think there has to be understanding on our part. And I think this links to what you were saying about emotional intelligence, Tiffany. Mm. We have to understand ourselves. We have to understand the nature of what goes on around us if we're going to have any hope of remaining relevant to what we want to remain relevant to.
Yeah.
And so I think you know, that whole question mark over whether somebody is self-aware or not, somebody that's completely oblivious in that respect is just going to blitz through life without a care for anything else round about them. But then we talk about relationships, we talk about responsibilities and so forth. At some point, that self-awareness comes under, I'm going to say, attack, because we start to find ourselves in situations where, because of people around us and things around us, that actually we can't remain unaware of other things. We have to start to relate to them. And relating is relevance.
I would argue that point, because there are a lot of people that take comfort in the fact that nothing is their fault. Now, it's that victim. It's that victimhood. These things always happen to me. I could buy a lottery ticket every day of the week, but people like me don't win. Everybody else is lucky. I'm unlucky. People are like this throughout their entire lives, and they remain unaware. And they can remain unaware because they simply don't take responsibility for anything, because it's not their fault.
Great point.
But I love when you said we need to be aware of what we are, you know, relevant to. Well, we have to be aware of the relevance of the relevance, you know. And if you're not aware, that's where you end up getting managed out, or you get, you know, you get made redundant, or you manage yourself out in some cases because you're so fixed in not moving forward. And you have no idea why, and that's where there's a problem. Because if you can't look back and self-reflect and understand what went on, forward.
If we were going to say that relevance then, or remaining relevant, is a wrapper around a bundle of things, yeah, what kinds of things would we include in that? I suggest that it might be self-awareness needs to be in the bucket there, or within the wrapper. Communication, understanding. What else could we put into there? Because skill sets develop and other things. What would we put inside the wrapper that we call remaining relevant?
I think that all leads to, as we mentioned there, the need for a growth mindset, the need for acceptance. But actually what comes on top of that is a learning plan. You know, if you do need to develop certain skills, how are you going to do that? How long will it take to do? For example, if we think about leadership, the way we're supposed to lead now as leaders, the textbook, the theory, the ideas have changed a lot in 30 years. Yeah. But have we adapted to that? Tiffany mentioned earlier, you know, the younger generation, right? They typically want to be led in a different way. They want different attributes from leaders. One of the areas mentioned there was about emotion, right? Because typically we want leaders to be authentic, we want them to be vulnerable, be part of that team, because that's what drives the trust. So I think that's the first wrap up around that. But then the next thing that comes to mind, and maybe this will help us do this a lot more, is having the boundaries. As setting our boundaries and thinking, because I see this with a lot of clients, we don't set boundaries. So we might establish an issue or a problem with ourselves on relevance, but do we actually set that boundary to say, right, I am going to do something about this. No one's going to disrupt me. I'm going to get that time I need to self-reflect, instead of, well, someone's told me I haven't got time. Someone's asked me to go and do something else, so I'll go and do that. And then you've given up your boundaries. You're not actually sticking to what you were going to do.
And, you know, it's funny that you bring this up, because one of the things that has come up so much in the last 3-4 months with clients from across the globe, from across different industries, is the fact that with technology now, we've got all these different teams and Slack channels and this and that. But it's our calendars. In organization, calendars are available for everybody to do whatever they want with. So people can book. I've got one, and in fact, it's one company in particular, and it's 3 different people. They've got 3 different meetings at the same time. And it happens all the time. And it's like, well, hold on, how is it not blocked? And people, well, they just put them on. And then it's up to me to decide where I have to go. And I'm like, well, that's disrespectful, comes to mind. But also, it's like, how do you manage that? How do you manage? How do you decide where you have to go? And then the boundaries come in. So that's what we talk about. It's like, well, you have to put a boundary down. Maybe the boundary is simple, first come, first served. And I do have people who put in, they block time for them to be able to reflect, for them to be able to just like You know, like you said, I need to do this, I need to do that, and I need to center myself before we start. You need to have that time. And then people bulldoze through it. Mm. So there is this thing where technology has made us a little bit, I think, disrespectful. We can use it, we can do it. So there's also understanding, I think, respecting other people. I think respect comes into it.
I was just going to ask a question, because when you were talking, Alex, something came into my mind, and I think it relates to what Tiffany's just added. Is relevance, a part of relevance, also knowing which battles to fight? Yeah. As well?
Yes.
You know, is it important for us to be at every meeting or not? Oh, is it important for us to be as reactive to people asking us for things, or is it about us being smarter than that and knowing where to prioritize?
To people pleasers, I think. It's like they feel that they have to say yes to everybody.
But you know, it also leads to what also came to mind was the Eisenhower matrix, which I discussed with a number of my clients. And I say, where are you? Are you spending most of your time being everything's urgent and important? The majority say it is. And I say, okay, why? Why is it urgent and important? And that's where they start to think, oh, I'm not sure. But for some, it's being busy. I'm doing something. I've done something. But actually, was it worth doing? What was the point?
But the thing is, urgent and important are two different things.
But they put them together, so it's urgent and important, and then they're getting stressed and everything's last minute. They've been procrastinating. They're attending meetings they don't need to attend, so they don't have enough time. And then suddenly, everything's now urgent and important because I should have done that days ago, but I haven't actually done that.
On that topic, last week I was talking to somebody at about the Eisenhower Matrix, and they said something very interesting. It stuck with me. When we ignore or we don't pay enough attention to the things which are important but not urgent, things like health, development, fitness, all of those things, if we ignore them, they may eventually become urgent and important because we've just had a heart attack or we've just found ourselves moved out of the role because we don't have the skills to do it anymore.
Or we find ourselves, as you were saying, Alec, you know, that you procrastinate and then you end up with everything being urgent and due because you've not managed your time.
Yeah.
But then it links back to what Nick said, and then what impact does that have on you being relevant? So is there a final point on this? Just thinking what you said, Nick, about, well, how do we wrap all this up? What do we need to do? Actually, is part of this, and to have that growth mindset, is to actually ask the question from others, get that feedback. You know, what do you think I need to be learning for my role? What am I not doing that I should be doing, as an example? But we typically don't want to ask for feedback, do we?
Well, I think an important thing is that leaders need to give honest and constructive feedback. You're actually doing people a disservice when you say you're absolutely amazing and you're going to be on the next promo cycle, when they're not, when they don't have the skills, when they don't, because you're actually robbing them the time to develop those skills, because you're just going to, kicking the can down the road. I'm not going to deal with this. Somebody else can deal with it. The next manager comes in and they have to effectively deal with it. So I think feedback is very, very important. And I think if you should ask for feedback, and if you're a leader, you should give it.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what you've just said there comes to mind? And again, recent conversations with clients, the feedback typically is failing. You think about the task, you do plan the task, you execute the task, but the feedback typically fails on reflecting and reviewing that task. And if we have that as leaders or managers of departments, actually have that maybe as a monthly bullet point that we must discuss in the department, yet actually getting ongoing feedback. Because I think the problem we see with feedback from leaders, some of it is every 6 months or every year. Hmm. But are you capturing everything? How is that helping you with your skills going forward? But if you had that regular reflection, what did I get right this month? What did I get wrong? And then we try and improve on that. Maybe that's one of the easiest ways to keep being relevant, because actually you're learning, you're being forced to reflect and learn as you go through your job.
And don't lose sight, I guess, if we're wrapping up shortly, let's not lose sight of what we see as important to remain relevant to. It could be the workplace, it could be our employability, it could be relationships outside of work. Let's be very clear and very focused about what relevance means to us, because it could mean a raft of different things to different people, but think it through and then prioritize the things that, that really count.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully put.
Yes.
Thank you.
A nice ending. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think that's been an interesting and engaging conversation once again.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Until next time. Thank you for listening to Beyond Leading. If this episode was useful, follow or subscribe so you don't miss the next one, and share it with someone who'd appreciate it. And if you've got a minute, a quick rating or review really helps more people find the show.